From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Lots to talk about tonight. You know, we all think about it. If you haven't been involved in the judicial system in North America, that's Canada, United States, or wherever, you know, you hear about it on the news, maybe you read about it or you see a story, but we all hear about the mantra, innocent until proven guilty, but sometimes those that are found guilty are not. My next guest is an author from Florida. His name is David Merketz, and his book, Wrongly Charged, tells his story. And I thought I'd bring him on tonight for the whole segment to talk about that. So important with the way the world is today to talk to somebody and his thoughts about the judicial system. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, before we get into the book and the story behind the book, I want to talk to you a little bit, both as a citizen and someone who's gone through the court system and has lost faith in the system. Of course, I'm putting words in your mouth here. I'll let you tell your story in a minute or two. But just before the show came on, there was a press conference in Chicago where the mayor and the police chief or a commissioner or someone, anyway, they've decided to release the video of the police officer from last year shooting and killing the 17-year-old victim. That police officer has now been charged with murder. It's proven that he has shot the boy 16 times and says that he was in fear of his life because the boy wouldn't drop the knife. Nevertheless, they're going to release the video, and we have to think about Baltimore and other places and wonder, is this a smart thing to do? What are your thoughts?
Well, the best thing in the world is having video, because this way you can see both sides of the story. Now, you can never be sure what really happened without a video, because sometimes if a police officer asks you to drop a knife, you should drop the knife. I mean, they don't know what to expect in a lot of times. So the video will really show a lot to the judge and to the jury of what really happened. I mean, he could have panicked, very possible. And unfortunately, when you have a gun and you panic, you can run into a lot of problems. And as a police officer, you have to be more careful. But video is the best thing.
As far as evidence goes, of course, but I'm looking more along the inflaming the public, the fairness of this towards the police officer and him getting a fair trial when he's going to be judged very soon if he hasn't been already. What about that? You know, the video is one thing, absolutely, you can't get better evidence, but releasing it to the public now before the trial even starts?
Well, it's a very scary thing. You know, unfortunately, you're guilty till proven innocent.
Yeah.
And as a police officer, you're judged a lot harder than an average citizen because you're carrying a gun. And unfortunately, there's been a lot of bad press with police jumping with the guns and stuff like that. We had a case not too long ago in Florida. It happened. Unfortunately, a lot of times, over small little things, you can inflame a police officer when if you, cooperate. Yeah. They go through a lot during the day, and unfortunately these things happen, and it's a sad story.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens, and Chicago itself does not have a good track record here lately. All the murders that are going on, the street violence, now this video being released, it should be interesting. I would not want to be a law enforcement officer there. Anyway, Wrongly Charged, let's talk about that. Let's go back and tell the story briefly, because I want people to look at the book and read the book. But let's talk about your arrest and what brought the law enforcement to you.
Okay, well, what happened is a couple of years ago, we were running a locksmith business. And it's a very, very competitive business. in all the states, because the phone books aren't used a lot anymore, and everybody's using the online. And the locksmith business here in Florida is one of the few businesses that's not licensed or regulated. So anybody without any ID or anything can just become a locksmith, one of the few states that allow that. So the business became very competitive, and we started registering multiple names to try to get work called. And some of the names we registered were similar in nature to a larger competitor. So, for example, if the name of your company was ABC Lock Shop and Security Center, we registered through the state ABC Locksmith. And what would happen is a lot of people called 411 for ABC Locksmith, and they thought they were calling the other company. They got the same job. Everything was fine, but the other company lost some business.
Okay.
This is something that goes on, you know, every day. People come out with a product or a service. Someone tries to, you know, materialize or capitalize on it.
Sure.
Now, the interesting thing is that our website that had the ABC Locksmith looked nothing like the competitor's website. And at the bottom, we even had a disclaimer. We are not the other company. Quit here to be redirected. But it wasn't good enough. And one of the companies that we did it to in Palm Beach, Florida, just happens to do the work for the entire town of Palm Beach, including the police department.
Okay.
And in February of 2013, we received a phone call from somebody, and they said, we need a lock change on our unit. So we dispatched one of our independent contractors that works that area. He drove up to the place. He knocked on the door. They let him in. They showed him the lock. He took it off the door. He rekeyed it to a new key. He charged him. They paid him cash for the job, and as he was walking out to the, you know, his place to load his tools up, they knocked him to the ground, and they charged him with burglary of an occupied dwelling, grand theft, and impersonation. And that's basically how the story began.
Okay, now we're going to have to clarify some things. This is a, they set you up, for lack of a better term. This was
right.
This was law enforcement the whole time. Doing a sting, for lack of a better term. I'm trying to get terms that people will understand. A sting on you or your company, and this person that went out and did the job, he gets arrested. Am I wrong?
That's absolutely right.
Now, you have to wonder, what's the size of a place? You said Palm Beach?
Yeah, it's a very small police department. It's a very rich town over there. Mm-hmm. And then there was a few complaints with a couple of locksmiths were losing business to us, and they could have taken us to court.
Okay.
In fact, one of them tried, and they were unsuccessful because the name was registered, and it was similar. And this guy was friends with a police officer, and it mushroomed into a major case. It was the front page of the paper here in Florida.
Okay. Now, you now have one of your independent contractors gets arrested. When do you find out what's going on?
Well, I got a call from the person that I actually didn't send that guy out. I sent another one, and he, you know, went from a chain of events, and they told me what happened. And when I called the jail to see if we could help him, unfortunately, burglary of an occupied dwelling is a non-bondable offense. He had to sit in jail, so a judge set the bond. And a lot of times they won't send set a bond because it's a violent crime, burglary of an occupied dwelling. But 2 days later, he was able to be released on bond. And a couple of days after that happened, it wasn't finished yet. The same detective called one of our other independent contractors that had done work in the same area, and he called him up and said, we're conducting an investigation. We would like you to come in and, you know, give a statement. And he was frightened, but he said, should I go? Shouldn't I go? And I told him I wouldn't go. I would do the interview over the phone. But he felt he had nothing to lose, and he drove up there, and after the interview, they arrested him and charged him with the same three charges. So now there were two people that were arrested and charged with burglary, grand theft, a slew of charges.
This is going to be an interesting evening, ladies and gentlemen, and this is a story that you have to hear. David Merkatz is here, and we're talking about his book, Wrongly Charged. Okay, let's jump forward a little bit. When did you get involved with law enforcement?
Okay, now after these two were arrested, obviously I knew that it was just a matter of time.
Yeah.
So I retained an attorney, and, you know, he said, well, you got, you know, what should I do? I said, well, call him up and find out what's going on. And when he called him up, they asked me to come in for an interview, and of course I declined. I said if he has any evidence of any wrongdoing, let him get a warrant. And 3 months went by, and nothing happened. And I got a phone call in August of 2013 from the attorney. The detective called him up and said, there's a bench warrant for my arrest for burglary. Actually, in my case, it was money laundering, organized scheme to defraud, impersonation, a slew of second-degree felonies. And the bond for my case, because I have a friend that was in a bail bondsman, and he found out in advance that there was going to be a $17,000 bond required, and I, the next day, surrendered myself to the Palm Beach County jail. But see, knowing how to bond yourself out prior, amazing thing, I have a whole chapter about that in the book. So when I got there, I had everything arranged. Within 3 to 4 hours, I was able to get released without having to go through the entire system of 24 to 36 hours. So it's an interesting thing to know about.
Had you ever had any interaction with law enforcement before? Had you ever been arrested? Have you ever gone through the system?
Yes, actually I have. As a younger person in New York, I did something wrong when I was 20 years old. So I had some experience. I actually have something in my book where I had a conviction for a criminal mischief, and when I moved to Florida, I wanted to get my gun license, and they gave it to me, and they took it away, and I challenged it, and it went all the way to the high court, and I won a landmark decision against the state of Florida with that also. So I show people not to give up. If the law is on your side, you can actually beat them.
We'll get into more of the wrongly charged book itself, but we're talking about David and his case. Okay, so you bonded out. What happened next?
Okay, then it's a waiting game. And what normally happens is the state has between 30 and 60 days to make a decision. The police can charge you with anything they want, but the state reviews it, and they have three options. They can dismiss the case, they can up-file it, or they can down-file it. Now, an interesting concept, on all three of us, they downfiled and dismissed the impersonation charge, which I thought that that was the whole thing they were going after.
Right.
And for whatever reason, they decided to dismiss that charge. And in my case, they held the case for months and months. And the other two, all charges eventually were dismissed. But the sad part is, which people are not aware about, the charges were dismissed, but these people hired attorneys and incurred a total of $75,000 in legal fees, which, unfortunately, in a criminal case, is non-refundable.
When you finally, did you go to trial on your charges?
Well, what happened was, months went by on my charges, and the organized scheme to defraud charge was a very scary charge. I did a lot of research on it, and they don't have to prove to get a conviction that you hurt anybody. All they have to convince a jury that in some way you misrepresented yourself. So that's a frightening thought, because I know I didn't misrepresent myself, but a jury might think because we used a similar name, maybe we did misrepresent ourselves. And in Florida, the money laundering charge is not the same as a federal statute. If you do anything or convicted of any other count, you're automatically a money launderer because you made money off an illegal activity. So it was a frightening thing. I was facing 15 to 20 years in prison. So the state came back with an offer to me. I had two options: try the case, another $35,000 in legal fees, which is non-refundable, or take a plea. And they offered me a petty theft charge, 6 counts of petty theft, adjudication withheld on all counts. So I thought to myself, well, in a case like that, to take a misdemeanor petty theft with a withheld, or opposed to risking 15 years in jail and spending another $35,000, I unfortunately was one of the people that decided to take the plea and cut my losses.
And you were sentenced to?
Probation.
Okay. So now let's get back a little bit to the others that were arrested. What happened to them?
All charges were eventually dismissed. One of them was completely expunged from the record, because if charges are dismissed in Florida, you can have it expunged, so there's no criminal record at all. The other person didn't pay the money to have it done, but all the charges were dismissed. So they spent an 8-month investigation, And you can't imagine how much taxpayer money to get six petty theft charges, which adjudication is withheld, which means no criminal conviction. And my case ended 2 years ago, so my probation was switched to what's called administrative probation. So basically, it's like nothing.
It's just on the books. Waste of tax. It's just on the books, and then that's where it went. Now, you thought at that time that, okay, this is good, we'll continue on. What about your business? Was that the end of it?
Well, I got out of the business because the story actually doesn't end. There's a new chapter to the story since the book came out, and I'm actually working on the second edition because of it. The case is over. Yeah, well, it gets very interesting. The case is over, and now we can go into chapter two. What happened is the Attorney General of Florida decided to call me in for an interview a few months ago. And he said, you know, we're thinking of charging you again with unfair and deceptive trade practices. And that's a civil case, even though it, you know. So what they decided when they called me in, they said, well, you know, you advertised like this, you did that. I said, listen, I'm not sorry for what I did. I registered these names legally. If the state of Florida thought they were too similar, that's their problem. They should have said that the application is rejected. And then they said, with the unfair, I said, listen, Florida in 2010 proposed a bill that would actually legislate what goes on about locksmiths and, you know, no using two different names and all that, and the bill died. I said, so you have no laws in effect, and as far as I'm concerned, you know, I'm out of the business, but let me be honest with you, we did nothing wrong. So 2 months after that, they sent us a letter saying they'd like a check for $60,000, a $10,000 fine for the victim. And I said to them, well, you're not getting a dime. So 2 months later, in September 25th, they decided to file a civil case, and they're suing me now for $60,000. Well, I wish them a lot of luck, because I will never pay them that $60,000 for the same six people that will reimburse. And I filed a strong answer with the top story on Google last week, and I'll take this case all the way up to the Supreme Court if necessary, because there is no way they're going to get paid twice for the same thing. I don't care if one is civil and one is criminal.
David Merkatz is here, and we're talking about his book, Wrongly Charged. Now, a lot of people don't understand the difference between civil prosecution and criminal prosecution. The civil prosecution, in other words, is they're suing you, correct?
Yeah, see, the good thing about a civil case versus a criminal case is a civil case, even if they win, you can't go to jail. It's all about money.
Right.
And the other thing is, in a civil case, which is the way the criminal system should work, and I'm actually working with a couple of people to try to get this changed, in a civil case, if I decided to retain an attorney and I win, all court costs and attorney's fees are paid by the loser. Now, that's the way it should be in a criminal case, too, because otherwise I would have went to trial. So I chose right now to represent myself. I do a pretty good job on civil cases representing myself. And basically, I wrote an answer which was plain and simple, telling them that they have no legislation. These victims were already reimbursed. And I have no intentions of paying twice for the same crime.
Yeah, and a lot of people call that double jeopardy. And but they're going to use the excuse that one is civil and one is not. Why is the state of Florida so interested in you, do you think?
Well, you know, when the book came out, and I released everybody's name in the book, the story, and I told the story exactly, I didn't knock anybody in the book. I told the story exactly the way it was. I told them, well, I don't think what I did was nice, but it goes on every day. But I didn't say anything bad about anybody in the book. All I told was the truth, and that the state of Florida wasted a lot of money, and now they're going to waste a lot more money because, see, the problem is, even if they win, they're never going to get a dime because I'll file an emergency appeal. The case will cost them thousands of dollars, and I'm going to represent myself. So, you know, I hope they have a lot of money to keep fighting this case.
Let's get to Wrongly Charged. And what is the basis of the book? It's not just your story. It's a lot of it's advice to others, is it not?
Right. What I teach in the book is what you do during a traffic stop. I teach people how to bond out of jail without being a judge if it's a nonviolent crime, like mine. So you don't have to sit in jail and wait to go to magistrate court and sit there for 2-3 days where I can get you out if you follow what I teach in the book. In less than 7 hours, you can be bonded out and be home with your family. So there's a lot of things I teach. I teach how to erase a conviction A lot of states have expunged or sealed laws that a lot of people are not aware of. And the states that don't have it, like New York, you can still have your civil rights restored and get that real estate license or that gun license that you want, you know, so you're not ruined for the rest of your life. So I go through a lot. I teach people what to do when you're arrested, what to answer, what not to answer. And it became a number one bestseller on Amazon in June.
David Merkatz is here. We're talking about his book, Wrongly Charged. You mentioned traffic stops, something that happens to all of us every day, millions of times a day across North America and around the world. Traffic safety is important. Municipalities and cities and governments use fine revenue to bolster their budgets for police departments and roads and all that. I'm curious about what you suggest to those that do get pulled over for whatever infraction.
Okay, I've been pulled over about 10 times in the last 15, 20 years. I've only received 2 tickets and beat both of them in court. it's very easy to beat most of the tickets, but the thing is that you have to be polite. When a police officer pulls you over, the first thing you should do is, you know, keep your hands on the wheel, be very polite. Even if you know you did nothing wrong, shower them with politeness, not with nastiness, because that's what they want. If you're very polite, on the back of the ticket, when they're writing the ticket, if they decide to give it, they take notes on there, and a lot of people are unaware of that. And a lot of times, if you are really polite and nice, thank you, and I'm sorry, and all of that, they're not used to that. They're used to mostly nasty people. They may not even show up in court. You'll win on that thing, or if they do show up, they'll tell the judge, you know, he was very nice, and they'll at least withhold the adjudication. So niceness is number one. And number two, if you get pulled over at night, when you pull over, roll the window down and put the dome light on. Make sure that when they approach the car, they feel comfortable, especially what's going on now. If you make a sudden move, you know, they're nervous. They'll pull out their gun, accidents happen. So politeness, make the police officer feel comfortable, and you'll do a lot better when you get pulled over.
Drinking and driving, DUIs, those sorts of things. We look at the statistics across North America, and we see the stats on drunk driving deaths, and governments try to regulate by making heavy fines, taking cars, taking licenses. But sadly, drinking and driving and impaired driving continues on, and in fact it's worse than it ever was. What about that, and what do you tell the people about that traffic stop that may lead to something more serious?
Well, in the state of Florida and most states now, they've gotten very strict, and getting a DUI it'll ruin you. First of all, if you're convicted, you're going to lose your license at least for a year. You're going to have to get an SR in Florida, an SR-22 endorsement, which costs you $4,000 to $5,000 a year on top of your regular insurance. So it's a real bad thing if you get pulled over and you get convicted of that. But the most important thing, which is if you do drink and drive, which you shouldn't, if you get pulled over, is not to submit to the breathalyzer test. And that's a scary thing, because if you say you're not going to take it, in Florida, they do have the right to arrest you. But on the other hand, if they arrest you and you don't give them the evidence, their case becomes a lot harder to prove, and you still can get your license back for a work permit in Florida temporarily. But if you give them the breathalyzer test, then you're giving them the evidence if you know you've had something to drink. So unfortunately, you shouldn't be drinking to begin with, but if you've had a couple of beers and you get pulled over, the 0.08 is very high, you know, it's a very low number, and a lot of people that are thin can score the 0.08 very easily. So, you know, that's my advice. If you do get pulled over and you have had anything to drink, don't take the breathalyzer test, but be prepared. You will be arrested if you don't take the test.
And it's interesting, though, that if I may counter you a little bit, that what about those that may be on that line, and by taking the test, they may be able to exonerate themselves?
Yes. Well, you know what? In that case, they do have an app now that just came out. It was advertised on one of the promotional shows that you can actually put on an Android or an iPhone, and it's an interesting thing. I think it costs about $75 or $80, you can actually blow into it before you get into the car and see the score below 0.08, so that if you do get pulled over, you're right. Then if you take the test, you know you're going to pass it, and then you'll be okay. But interestingly enough, a lot of states, even if you score below 0.08, they can still charge you with being an impaired driver. So it depends on the state you live in.
Bottom line, if you've been drinking, don't drive. David Merkatz is here, and his book, Wrongly Charged, talks about his story, and he gives advice to you if you get arrested. And I started the interview with that term, innocent until proven guilty. What does that mean to you, David?
Well, I don't go by that. It's guilty until proven innocent, because when you get arrested, you have to bond out. You have to lay out the money to get bond out. And by the way, that money is never refunded. So if you're found not guilty, or if the case is dismissed, you're out 10% of whatever you pay to a bond. So in my case, I was out $2,000. If you're found not guilty, you're still paying for all the court costs and attorney's fees, and that's the problem. That's why the laws need to be changed, and that's why people now are pleading guilty to crimes they didn't commit because of money and fear. In my case, it was both. I ran out of money. I was into my case for $75,000, and the fear factor of possibly being found guilty and spending 15 years in jail, and the money factor of knowing that if I did spend another $35,000, I'd be over $100,000 non-refundable, even with a not guilty verdict.
You know, we hear stories of those that have been incarcerated for 10, 15 years on very serious charges being released because of DNA evidence 30 years later or 15 years later or whatever. People fight and keep fighting until the truth does come out. But it is interesting to wonder about the statistics of those that are incarcerated because, A, like you say, they didn't want to fight the case. They didn't have the money to fight the case. And, you know, we hear about Hollywood justice, and those with money seem to win, and those that don't. How can we change that? How can we make the system more fair?
Okay, that's what my new second edition of my book is about. I'm working with a lot of, I don't think the law will pass, but we're working hard. We're trying to propose a law called the Merkatz Wrongful Compensation Act. And basically, it's a very simple act to level the playing field. If you're found not guilty of a trial on all counts, all your money is returned to you, just like in a civil case, or court court, or bond court, or if the charges are completely dismissed. Now, can you imagine in my case how much the state would have had to spend? They probably would not have prosecuted the crimes. A lot of crimes are prosecuted because they'll prosecute you because they'll make you take a mortgage out on your house just to teach you a lesson, not to do something again, even though when they know they don't have a case. Now, if they could be reimbursed, the criminals, a lot of criminal attorneys, if they knew that their clients were, you know, not guilty and they really felt they could win, like a medical malpractice case, would take it on a contingency. Now you would have these top attorneys defending you, knowing they're going to win in most cases, and the state would have to pay both sides. They wouldn't be prosecuting people if they didn't have real evidence, and it would level the playing field, and that would make things a lot better.
White-collar crime, money crime, drug possession. They say our jails are full of those that, even if they are guilty, shouldn't be in jail because of the type of crime. What about that? What about the incarceration rate the way that it is now for those that have committed crimes, money crimes, or like marijuana sales or things like that? You know, there's an election going on right now, or campaigning going on right now. You're either tough on crime or you're not. If we didn't have jails and we couldn't put some of the bad people away, we'd have big-time problems. But what about those who are in jail that may be guilty, but maybe jail's not the place for them?
Yeah, well, a lot of the states now, like Florida, is just starting to come into, like a lot of the states in the Midwest, where now if you get caught with a small amount of marijuana in Broward County, they're giving you a fine. But before, you were facing, you know, 60 days or 90 days in jail. And, you know, they're slowly starting to, you know, change a lot of the laws. because they're going to be putting people in jail for every little thing, and there's no room for it. There's a lot of people that, you know, commit violent crimes, white collar crimes. They would be better off, if especially a first time offender, giving a person a second chance and putting them on probation, because some people, for like a shoplifting thing, a minor thing like that, some people do it out of desperation, or, you know, they have a problem, they just need to get some help. So that, you know, putting people in jail for small things, unless they've injured somebody, is not the way to go.
David Marcas is here talking about the book Rawlings Charged. If you click on the link in the show notes, you'll see how you can buy that. And we'll be continuing on for another 15 minutes or so. David, tell us a little bit more about the book and what people can expect to see in it.
Well, I give my story, which is, you know, a very common and unbelievable story of what happened. Then I'll show you how, you know, with the bond system, how it works. I go through some sad stories about people that didn't take the plea. I had a customer of mine, unfortunately, that was in a traffic accident in Boca Raton, Florida. And he was a mile away from his home, and he was a diabetic and a very respectful guy. And he was speeding. He was going about 8 to 10 miles over the speed limit. And when he came over the overpass, he slammed into a car and unfortunately killed 5 elderly people.
Oh, jeez.
He got out of the... Yeah, and it was really unfortunate. He shouldn't have been speeding, but he wasn't intoxicated, but he was starting to feel he needed his medicine, and he was trying to get home. He was a few minutes from the house. And what happened was he stopped, and unfortunately he couldn't do anything, and they arrested him and charged him... Months later, it didn't happen right away, with vehicular homicide. And the state of Florida offered him a deal, 5 years in prison. And he felt it was an accident. And he stopped. He was not intoxicated. Yes, he was speeding, but he didn't think he should go to jail for 5 years for it. Unfortunately, and he hired the best attorney in Florida at the time. And he lost at a trial, and he appealed it. And the funny thing that people are unaware of is that if you don't take that plea, here's a guy that was never arrested in his whole life. They gave him the maximum penalty. They sentenced him to 15 years in state prison. He's first going to be getting out of jail next April. I follow the case because I felt so bad for the guy. He's doing 13 out of the 15 years in jail for a true accident. And yes, people got killed. But if he would have taken the plea, he would have got 5 years. Why couldn't the judge sentence him to 5 years? Because he exercised his constitutional right for a trial and, you know, took up taxpayer time, so they punished him and gave him the maximum penalty. And I put a note in my book that a lot of people don't know. The jury is never told what the possible sentence is. And the jury foreman, in his case, said that if the judge would have told him that he was going to sentence this man to 15 years in state prison, they would have definitely came back with a not guilty verdict. So there's a lot of knowledge that people don't know that I include in the book, including, you know, stealing or expunging and why people take pleas. I have a section in there on wrongly convicted, which is you can have tears in your eyes when you read about some of the people that spent 30 years in prison for crimes they didn't commit.
Yeah, and it's a story that can be told, I think, by many others that we don't know about. David Marcas and the book Wrongly Charged. Let's talk about the bail system a little bit and bonding out. It is different in different jurisdictions as far as that goes. I've had the bail bondsman on this program many times, and of course it's been glamorized on television in the past and all that, but what about bail bondsmen? Are they there? Are they a help or a hindrance?
Best thing in the world. I mean, my guy, I actually acknowledge him in my book, Mark is the Greatest. But see, the thing is that they, today, maybe 10 years ago it was different, but today everything is electronic.
Right.
And if you have a relationship with a bail bondsman, they don't even have to go down, in most cases, to the jail to get you out. They can do it electronically. And if it's a nonviolent crime, an arrest for a traffic stop, or something that, you know, no injuries, or, you know, something that doesn't rise to a violent crime, a lot of bondsmen will bond you out electronically and meet with you after, and you pay them their 10%, so it can get expensive. If it's a $5,000 bond, it's going to cost you a non-refundable $500. But the thing is, they electronically can get you out faster than you getting a friend or a relative to go down to the jail and sit for an hour or two, process it in and out, where they can do it so electronically. And if the bond ever gets raised, the bail bondsman electronically can adjust the bond, where if you have it as a cash bond, you can't do that. You have to go back down to the jail. So bondsmen are the greatest thing in the world. I love them.
When you wrote the book initially, and now you're doing part two, so to speak, what was the message that you wanted to get across to those that that read it?
Well, I wanted to help other people. A lot of people have been wrongly charged or wrongly convicted of crimes, and a lot of people have for the first time, you know, get arrested on a minor traffic stop, and they don't know what to do when they're arrested. They don't know who to call, how to get out, or what to expect. So I go through every single step, and I tell them what's going to happen. And it's, all the jurisdictions are similar. Some have higher bonds, some have lower bonds. But I tell people, you know, unfortunately, what happens and how a police officer can charge you with anything they want. And you're going to have to bond out based on what they charge you with. If the state downfiles the charge down the road, portions of your bond will be, returned to you. Interestingly enough, but the commission that you pay the bondsman, if it's not his fault, will not. So I go through step by step, and I keep every aspect of, from the time you're arrested, what to expect, to the time you bond out and how long it's going to take. And interestingly enough, that you are not allowed to make a telephone call when you're arrested, which a lot of people don't realize.
You see that on television.
Yeah, they don't realize that.
If the, and I highly doubt this, but if the Attorney General of Florida listens to this interview, what will he or she think about this? Will you get into more hot water?
Well, I don't care less. I mean, I filed an answer. I couldn't care less because I let him know from day one that I'm going to have media present at every court case and that I have no intention of taking any deal. So if he said to me tomorrow, give us $1, I'll tell him dismiss the case. So this case is going to be worse than the O.J. Simpson case because my second book is going to name him and everything about this state of Florida in the book, including their home addresses in the book. So they messed with the wrong person when they started with me.
It's interesting you mentioned O.J. Simpson and others, but the way that the media covers crime and punishment today is a lot different than it was several years ago. What about the media and your case and other cases? Is there more that the media can do to get the right story out there?
Well, see, when it first happened, I was the front page of the newspaper. Because remember, the media only reads, they only knew what was going on. They police arrest, it was number one. You know, they didn't know what was going on. And then when I started doing I've done over 75 radios and some television shows with this already. When I started explaining what happened, people said, why did they arrest you? Just because you used a similar name. It goes on every day. Someone comes out with a product or service. I don't understand why they even prosecuted a case like that. I did a show in New York where the guy was actually had me on with a prosecutor, and he couldn't believe they actually arrested me for something like that. I mean, it's a civil matter. If somebody's using a name that's similar, the Attorney General had more right to do what they did originally, to file it as unfair and maybe unfair and deceptive and, try to sue me. Not wait till after a criminal case, after people were paid back, but they alleged that there were people that were overcharged. Well, that was a bunch of nonsense, but I just wanted to make it go away. So, I read the statute very clear, and the statute says if the victims were reimbursed, the court has the right to forfeit any civil penalty. It doesn't mean they have to. But I have a very good argument going here because we don't have any regulations in Florida that, to guide us, like attorneys are told how to advertise. Locksmiths don't have anything in Florida to guide them. And we're not doing it anymore. There's no new evidence. Because I asked the Attorney General when I went down there, was there any more complaints? Because I haven't been in the business for over, a year and a half, 2 years. He says, no, it's the same case. So I said, why are you still bothering me then? We're not doing it anymore. So this is going to play out very good in the media when it comes to a head.
And what was the response when you asked him, why are you still bothering
me? Well, there was a lot of public pressure from the other companies that we were taking business from, And instead of letting them sue us, they became the police for all the locks that you know, were, you know, losing business. But I don't think they're going to prevail after reading the laws and knowing that, you know, it's not double jeopardy, but it's like double jeopardy. And I don't get frightened by a civil case because I know they're not going to get a dime whether they win or lose. So it's, I'll appeal the case and I'll keep it. I'll keep them spending money for the next 10 years if that's what they want to do. The best thing they could do, if they're listening, is dismiss the charges.
Let's talk a little bit about politics before I let you go. And I appreciate you coming on. If you want to learn more about the book, click on the link in the show notes. What about this? You know, we hear the Donald Trumps and the other politicians that are out there talking, whether it's right, left, or in between. We hear more about terrorism than we do law and order, and I guess that's important because that's a sign of the times. But like you say, the regulations are so mixed up, and there are innocent people in jail. What about the politicians? What would you like to hear from them?
Well, you know, they got to do something to, you know, help the people that are charged, like I'm saying, that are wrongly charged. Because we go through, people that have never been arrested don't realize when I tell the story that if you're found not guilty, that you still lose. Win or lose, you lose. And people don't understand. Well, if you spend $10,000 in legal fees on a civil case and you win, you collect it back, which is only fair. But in a criminal case, you don't. So I'd like to see whoever gets elected do something to help defendants that are wrongly charged get reimbursed for their fees if they're found not guilty or if the state ultimately dismisses the charges. And it would stop all these wrongful arrests.
I'll give you the last word for those that are thinking about picking up your book or the part two that's coming up. What would you like to tell them?
Well, the book is available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and Books a Million. It's called Wrongly Charged, A Look at the Legal System. It's $17.95 for the paperback, and it's $8.99 for the download edition. And it's very informative. It's got 5 stars, and it's I think they'll find it very educational. And we have a website also, www.wronglycharged.com, that they can keep up to date with and see when our next edition is going to come out, which is going to include a subscription with a host of people that will help anybody that's wrongly charged. And we are donating 10% of the profits of the book to help anybody that's wrongly charged or wrongly convicted of the crime.
I wish you good luck with your book. The book is Wrongly Charged. The author is David Merkatz. Click on the link in the show notes to learn more about the book and to get to David's webpage. Thanks again, sir, and hopefully we can do this again with some more updates.
Anytime you want. Thanks a lot.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's David Merkatz, and he does have an interesting story. Some I don't agree with. I'm not sure why you would want to publish the names of those that you've been dealing with in your book. But nevertheless, we try to get the story out there. And yes, there are many that are wrongly accused, wrongly convicted, that are in jail. I do want to talk a little bit more about the situation in Chicago. I think the mayor there and the police department in the city and the judge that made the order are, well, I think they're nuts to release the video of the police officer shooting the 17-year-old. What about the fair trial for that police officer? And what about the racial tension that will come out of this? Protest, yes. Protest lawfully and legally, but many don't. And I think by releasing this video at this time before this officer even goes to court is a death sentence, not only for him, but for the system itself. It's ridiculous to release this video, and I think it's going to do nothing but inflame those that like to get things inflamed. The story's out there, but I'm not sure by looking at the video. You know, it goes back to Daniel Pearl, the video of him being beheaded. What was gained by that was a hatred for the radical Islamists, so we saw it. We knew it happened, but do we have to see it for it to sink in? Maybe for some, yeah. Maybe I'm not right with this, and releasing the video is the right thing, but I don't think it is. I don't think you talk about fair trials. How is this officer going to get a fair trial with this video being released right now? Well, that's it. That's tonight's show. I want to thank you all for listening here on Scared Monkeys Radio and watching on Access 7. And we'll see you again here real soon on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio and Access Channel 7. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of ScaredMonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.